This is Making Money Easy with Gillian Bowen. Feel free to say you didn't like it if there's something else you'd prefer to hear me do.
This is Making Money Easy. I'm Henry. You're listening to my mummy.
Oh, well, that's good.
Don't forget to review the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
The top economists and experts on the topics you want and you need to understand. Here's your host, Gillian Bowen.
Hello, hello. I really hope you're enjoying season two. It's been fun to make so far, and we've already learnt so much. This episode, we're going to expand your brain by looking inside your brain. Yep. We're going to talk about why it's important to understand what you think about money, what your relationship is with money, and how all of that can impact your financial decisions. And it could be happening without you even realizing it. The aim, as always, making money easy. So to help me help you, I'm joined by Women Talking Finance creator and money coach, Karen Ely, and David Harvey, a champion of financial wellness in the financial services industry. Hello.
Hello, Gillian. How are you?
Gillian, good to chat. How are you?
I'm well. And I'm so glad that you're both here to help me pick through this. So I thought what I like to do when we're meeting experts for the first time, and because it helps us to understand how you got here, is to get you to tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do. Karen, why don't you go first?
Sure. So I'm a behavioral money coach, which is a relatively new and emerging field in Australia. So I basically help clients navigate both practical and emotional sides of managing money. So I was a financial advisor for over 15 years. And during that time, I observed that clients' patterns and behaviors when it comes to money weren't always rational and would often hold them back from making the most of their money. So I got really curious as to why we do what we do with money and discovered this whole field of behavioral finance and neuroscience being the study of the brain. And I really enjoy it as a financial advisor, working more on the human side of managing people's money, because it's never just about the money. It's really how it can enhance our lives. So I left financial planning to create a money coaching course and company.
I love that, whether our decisions are rational or not. We'll dive into that. David, your turn. What do you do and how did you get here?
Yeah, thank you, Gil. Look, I guess a little bit like Karen, I've been in the advice space for quite some time, about 25 years, actually. So obviously I started as a very, very, very young man. I thought I'd slide that in there. But look, at the moment, nice. I'm really fortunate. I work with a global business called Saxo, and we'll unpack that a little bit later in terms of what we do. But really, it's about putting the best tools in clients' hands to make really savvy investment decisions. But look, I'm a boy from the bush. I'm really lucky. I was the son of a bank manager in a couple of small country towns. So, and again, we'll talk about that a little bit later. So that's where I've come from. I've come from good old fashioned walk into the bank face to face salient advice. And in the last 20 odd years of my journey through financial services and the complexities thereof, I just keep coming back to that. I keep coming back to my knitting and to my roots. And I think, you know, again, we'll talk about that today.
I love it. I'm from the bush too. So welcome. We love it. So as we dive into our chat and you're listening along to us, you might find yourself having to pause as your brain starts to wander and you start to think what it is you think when someone says the word money. And that's okay. Pause as much as you need. Karen, let's talk about the theory that your work is based on. That is that money is as much an inside job as it is an external and a practical one.
Yeah. So just like there's two sides to a $100 note, there's actually two sides to managing our money. So the practical, or what I'd call the external role, and that's the actions that we take. So being things like managing our cash flow and budgeting, investing, looking at our superannuation and retirement and insurance. But there's also another side to managing our money, and that's our emotional or internal side, which is related to how we think, feel, and behave when it comes to our money. and it's the internal workings of how we make our financial decisions. And I like to call this your relationship with money. Mm. And I believe that one of the most important relationships we all have in our life is our relationship with money, because it's one that lasts our entire life.
Mm. David, what do you think about this idea, this internal versus external?
Oh, look, I think it's found. Karen's on point, Gil. I think it's foundational. So many things I could tell you. One thing I would say is, over the last 25 odd years, the patient always self prescribes. What do I mean by that? As an advisor, I would have clients, young people, old people, couples, didn't really matter, who would come in with a predetermined idea or a solution or a Band-Aid or a product or a self-managed super fund or whatever the case may be. And look, the quality of your outcome is determined by the quality of the questions that you ask. So if the question that you ask is, what is the product or what is the solution or what is the Band-Aid, I think you're really missing the point. It's foundational. It's actually peeling back, you know, what do you believe? What are the foundations to your relationship with money? What are the foundations to the conversations you have with your significant other or others? How's it handled around the kitchen table? These are all the key drivers, the key motivations to what really empowers or disempowers our decisions in relation to money.
So hands up if you're listening along and you're now trying to work out what emotions you use when you make financial decisions. You may already know and you've been ignoring them. And now you're thinking, why do you use these emotions when you make financial decisions? Karen, this then makes me ask a question to you. When is, and look, David's already touched on a little, but when is a person's money story formed? Why do you talk about that idea of a money story? And why is it important to know your money story?
Yes. So I think that really comes to the crux of it. And a lot of it is around the neuroscience and the study of our brain, because it's deeply informed the role that our brain plays in influencing our decisions. It's got a significant impact on our behaviors, especially when it comes to money. And most of what we think isn't really conscious. It comes from an unconscious and is really pattern driven. And 70% of our brain functioning is that unconsciousness. And there's really three parts to our brain. There's the instinctive or primal part of our brain, there's the emotional or limbic system, and the rational part of our brain, which is that neofrontal cortex. And they develop over time. And the limbic system, or that emotional part of our brain, is where most of the functioning comes from. And this grows between the ages of 2 and 12 is when most of it's developed. So it's like a computer that's more powerful than once anyone that's ever built. And between the ages of 2 and 12, our child's brain is like a recording device. But the problem is, it doesn't know what it's recording, and it doesn't have the capacity to make sense of the information or fully understand it. It's very perceptive based. But you can imagine, you know, the perception or perspective of a 7-year-old is very different to what it's going to be when we're an adult. So in a healthy environment, this is really good. However, with money, as children, we quite often pick up conflicting and mixed messages around money. So understanding what life was like for you between the ages of 2 and 12 when it comes to finances, was money easy to come by? Was there financial constraints? Was it happy when people talked about money, or was there stress or anxiety involved in that? Because all of those internal memories that we have, they get filed away in our brain, but they actually drive all of our patterns and behaviors as an adult. So it's really important to actually understand your financial narrative or your story, how it was performed.
That's really interesting. And I'll have to pause myself to go back and have a think about what I was thinking between 2 and 12. But I have been thinking about that, and it is really informative what you've been touching on there. And so, David, thinking then of the people that would have been coming into your office and talking talking to you, and you've mentioned they come in with predetermined ideas on how they think they're going to fix their money problems, and yet they're in your office. That makes me giggle a little bit. But how do you get a person to discover what their money story is, what their relationship with money is, I guess, to help them become self-aware?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think it's a really great question, actually. And I think, again, for the listeners, maybe sort of cast your mind back, listener, to sort of some of those little truisms, those little aphorisms. And by the way, they're not truisms. They're made up. So my Aunt Madge, God bless her, would always say, a fool and his money is soon parted. I remember one day she used to sort of take care of us sometimes after school, and I don't know, I was probably 8 or 9 and I'd lost my lunch money, went hungry that day. And David, a fool and his money are soon parted. And it sort of never really left me. Or oftentimes we might hear it from a well-meaning math teacher. You got to have money to make money, compound interest, et cetera. So I think awareness is 80, 90% of the battle. Actually just uncovering, having a little bit of a think back to some of these well-meaning, potentially well-meaning, or little truisms or little aphorisms. That's the first part. But then I think the more practical thing day to day, as I mentioned before, is to unpack how that plays out. And awareness, again, is, you know, the large part of the battle. What's the conversation you have in your mind? Okay, so you've just gotten a raise. You've just gotten a bonus. Maybe that conversation is, oh, my gosh, I deserve it. Great, I'm going to go out and buy that thing or that bag or that new suit or whatever. Is that the conversation? Or is there a conversation called, yeah, I worked really hard for this, so let's invest in me. Let's put a little bit aside. You know, noticing these kind of things. And then, of course, noticing the conversation you have with your significant others, with your husband, with your wife, with the kids. Just by noticing that, I think that's half the battle.
Mm. And look, this all ties in well with a principle concept that I only really discovered myself about 6 to 12 months ago when I started listening to another podcast called The Life Coach School with Brooke Castillo. It's a good one. But basically the theory is similar to what Karen talks about, which is why I'm going to get her to help explain, is that thoughts create feelings, which create actions and behaviours, which create results. So I'll say that again. Thoughts create feelings, which create actions and behaviours, which create results. Karen, how does this apply to a financial situation? And can you give us some examples?
Yes, happy to share those, Gillian. But can I just reinforce? I love Brooke Castillo.
Yes.
It sounds like you've listened to one of the same episodes that I have. It's quite life-changing.
Yeah, I've told literally like 10 of my friends, and they've all subscribed, and we have phone calls that are literally just based on her episodes just to talk about it. Anywho, continue on.
Yes. So as David shared some really practical examples around how you can look into your childhood, it is really important to understand those, because that is the origin of all of our financial beliefs. And I'm happy to share mine. So I went through the process of being coached and doing all of this internal work myself a couple of years ago. And what I discovered that I was completely unaware of was that when I was quite young, I had a school banking account, which most of us have. And that's one thing I get clients to do, is like, what are the earliest memories you can remember around money? So I went through this exercise, and one of mine was having a school bank account with money going in there. And we had a challenging family situation, and my father left, and he actually took the money out of our school banking account, my sister and I. And then a couple of years later, we had a boarder come stay with us, and she used to help my mum look after us after school. And my mum had some savings in a sock drawer, as you do in the 70s. And when she left, she took the money. So by the age of 9, my experiences around money was having someone take it away from you. Mm. So what I didn't realize, Gillian, is that at that time I decided, and one of my core beliefs around money was, what's the point in saving it? Someone will take it away from you.
Mm. How interesting. That is so interesting. I bet there's so many of you listening along right now that are now going back to that age period of 2 to 12 and seeing if you've had any experiences that you can remember that are now dictating actions that you then would take in your adult life. I really appreciate you sharing that with us, Karen. David, what do you think about that concept?
Yeah, it's really powerful. Again, I go back to that. I mean, there's other decisions I made as a 5, 6, 7 year old, you know, say when you're teased or when a kid points something out, or, you know, it has a massive impact, because the poor little boy or the poor little girl at that age, and you know, Karen, if you don't mind me saying, it sort of tugged at my heart when I heard that story. You just sort of rattled it off. And again, I appreciate, you know, you being open about that. But my gosh, you know, you've had a significant impact at which a 7, 8, 9 year old is trying to process that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it's borderline traumatic. And so as a 25, 30, 35, 40 year old, we just soldier on. A concept that I love thinking about is flipping the do have be. And what I mean by that is we do. We do school. We do university. We do our career. We, you know, do all these things such that we have. We have the results. We've got the HSC. We've got our undergrad. We've got a title, you know, whatever the case may be. And then finally, maybe one day we will be, you know, we'll be content. We'll be centered. We'll make smart decisions. Well, I think, you know, what Karen's saying, and you'll maybe for the listeners, is let's flip that. Let's be do have. Let's be that kind of person now who can make those clear decisions. And I think we all know that. You know, one of my favorite Nobel laureates, and I do have a couple, Thaler, always talks about slow thinking versus fast. Mm-hmm. So let's be that person who makes considered decisions, well-rounded decisions. And when you do that, you will do the kind of things that that kind of person is. And then ultimately, you'll have those results. So just flipping that, noticing it, being aware of it. And gosh, by the way, it's a work in progress. I've been at this for a long time.
Yeah.
And I still slip, and that's okay.
Of course.
It's okay to not be okay in our mental health and other areas of health. It's okay to not be perfect here as well, but it's a work in progress.
And as Brooke Castillo would say, you've got to work at it. You've got to put in the work. You've got to put in the work. And every day it may be a bit of work to work on your brain. Look, let's take a quick break, because let's be honest, our brains may need a minute to regroup. In a tick, we're going to talk about actions you can take to overcome what might be going on in your brain when it comes to money. I'm chatting with Karen Ely and David Harvey. David, how are financial services, an industry that you've been involved in for 20 odd years or more than, actually, I think you said 25 at the start. How have they traditionally gone about helping people with money?
Yeah, look, probably not well. I think, you know, a couple of things that stand out. I think the first thing that stands out is complexity, you know, and the fallacy of complexity and the jargon and the graphs and all the kerfuffle, as I like to call it. And, you know, and
if they can be the only ones in the financial planners, as they can be the only ones to calculate what to do with your life.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick story. When I started in the industry here in Sydney, Australia, I was up in the high town and up in a high tower. And clients would have to come to see us. And we held, it's called proprietary. That's a fancy way of saying that we held all the cards close to our chest.
Mm.
And we used really fancy terms and I guess validated our advice and our proposition. Well, it's flipped. It's completely and utterly flipped on its head, and all for the better. You know, I mean, I like to think of a term called a meritocracy. You could call it democratization. That's probably a bit charged, that term. So, and for me, a meritocracy is flip the model on its head, give the best of what you've got in the financial advice industry or investing or whatever the case may be, remove all the jargon, and put the power in the hands of the individual. Mm. They then get to choose. And of course, in most industries, that's the case now. Our industry is now catching up. The power of the consumer, the power of information, the power of empowerment, I think is key. So I guess, Gil, in summary, we haven't done it that well, but there's a tidal wave on its way. And look, a little plug as to where we work and why I work here is, you know, that's what we do and that's what drives us, but that's not important. I think what is important for the listener is you have power now. You just need to know how to access it.
Well, and Karen, that then moves me to my next question about whether just understanding finance or the money world is enough.
That's right. So I kind of see financial services industry, which I have a great deal of respect for and have been in it for over 20 years, but we do focus on the external solutions for what are internal problems. And so financial literacy is more of a knowledge gap. And yes, we do have that, but it goes deeper than that. It's more internal. It's about why we do what we do with money and how can we do it better. So I've never met anyone, Gillian, that has come to me and said, Karen, I had no idea that the way to create wealth is to spend less than I earn and invest. We all know what we need to do, but there's a gap between knowing and doing. It's just like exercising and eating well. We know that they make us healthy. It's the same with saving and investing and building your financial knowledge and having the right savings patterns and behaviors that is going to create our wealth, but we just don't do it. So the answer lies in what is going on internally for us. And mostly it's driven when it comes to money by fear, because our brain is naturally wired to protect us from fears. Mm. And that plays out in our financial behaviours.
Mm.
So then there's two things there for me. We've got to work out how to overcome the internal challenges. And then once you've done that, you've got to get to a point where you're able to take action. Well, Karen, how do we do that? Or maybe we're just working on that forever.
And that is a thing. It's like David said earlier, it's just something that we just have to work on, because we lapse into our old patterns and behaviours, because these patterns and behaviours that we learnt growing up, whether to be a saver or whether we are constantly in debt or whether we under-earn or overwork for our money, all of these patterns and behaviours have been deeply ingrained in us from a long time. So we need to rewire those neuro pathways, and that takes a lot of practice and consistency over and over again, because our brain, as David was saying before about we need to slow down the way we think, our brain is naturally and instinctually wired for us to think fast, to be responsive, to keep us out of danger, to keep us alive. And that's a very primitive part of our brain that's kept the species alive for a very long time, but it doesn't really bode well when it comes to our finances. We need to slow down and we need to ask ourselves, okay, I've got this primitive, this emotional and this rational part of my brain. Which one am I using today to make this financial decision? Mm. And even just asking yourself that question, slowing down the process, you're going to start thinking about the financial consequences to what you're going to do or not do with your money.
David, what advice would you give? I mean, and obviously it's just general advice. We don't know your specific circumstances. I'm not talking about going out and get a financial plan. I'm more talking about the person listening along right now that's thinking of how do I actually become aware of what's going on in my brain and then try and make better decisions or take some better actions. Are they writing down lists? Are they, what is it that they could do?
Yeah, I'll share something I started doing. And again, I've been at this for a couple of decades and I've been on the planet for five.
I thought you were a very, very young man.
If only the listeners could see me. During lockdown, I'm happy, if you call it that, but I'm very open to say that it was a struggle. It really was a struggle. I'm a very social person. I think most of us are very energetic, love the sunlight, love to get on the bike, love to get to the gym. And when all that stopped, I struggled. So I got back to what I used to do. I got out my little red diary, and every night and every morning, I did my 3-1-3. And what's that? And I think the cool thing is I then started to do this in relation to my finances, and it worked. So 3, three things that might have been holding me back. Three things, as Karen was saying, three little beliefs, three little current activities, three little things that probably aren't working for me. And be kind about it without judgment. I'm not bad. I'm not wrong. It's just stuff that's not optimal. It's not great. But here's the thing. One thing I'm doing really, really well. Okay, so writing in my diary, my 10-minute meditation. I actually did open up my budget. That's cool. I think a lot of us beat ourselves over the head because we don't look at our budget every day and we hate Excel spreadsheets and all that sort of stuff. Well, just put that to the side. That's not working for you. The one thing that you did do well is you jumped into your online app or you had a look at your internet banking account. Cool. And then start to chunk it down. What are the three big rocks? What do I mean by that? I think, again, going back to our industry, and as a planner, I would do this, we'd plan ahead for decades. This big thing called retirement and, you know, all this money in super, and it's a big mountain. And that can sometimes create a thing called apoplexy, i.e. you just don't act, you're just frozen. So what are the three big things I can do this week or this month or even today and then celebrate that? Three, one, three. Chunk it down.
Practical, physical steps of things that you can do that then don't seem too overwhelming. Karen, what do you think about an action or something that someone could do right now as they're listening along?
Yeah, firstly, I want to agree with David. It's those small but significant steps. So we can get really easily overwhelmed by all of the financial tasks and all of the information out there. So it's about chunking it down and just doing one thing that will get you closer to your goals, which I think is really important. Another thing that is really important is I believe the way we treat our money is the way we treat ourselves. So you want to invest time and effort, respect money, give it your attention. So create some daily rituals. So I look at my bank balance and just see what's coming in, what's going out. And I encourage people to do that just for a couple of months so they can really get a feel for what's coming in, what's going out. Having more of a conscious awareness about how they're spending money, how they're earning money. I think that is a really important thing to do. It's just like any other relationship. We need to invest time into it. We need to be really curious about it. And we just want to give it respect that it deserves. And money does deserve our respect and our time to do that. And then lastly, it's about the language we use. So the language internally, but how we talk about money to our friends. And I don't think enough of us actually talk about money, which is one of the problems. It's one of those things that's kind of like mystery. There's a bit of a whiff factor to talking about money. So we just avoid it. But having those conversations is really important because we learn from each other. And if we have shame or anxiety around money, it loves living in the shadows, like Brené Brown says, you know, shame loves shadows. So we need to bring it out the light and have conversations about it. But be really mindful of the language that you use. I hear so many clients say to me, I'm just not good with money. I'm bad with money. You need to change that around.
I promise I won't cut you off and I'll say what I was going to say, but change it to.
And turn it to around to say, I'm learning to be better with money. Even if you just start with that, change the language from disempowering to empowering.
I was going to say, I've had a lot of new listeners to the podcast, and a lot of them are women, say to me, I've been looking for this sort of thing because I've realized I don't really know anything about money or business. And I feel bad for them that they think they know nothing, but they would actually know something, but in their mind, they tell themselves they're not good at it. And I've said, well, that's the whole point of this podcast, is to just give you the confidence to be able to verse in this world of just having a chin wag about money and not being embarrassed about asking silly questions. Because look, let's be honest, I ask a lot of them and I'm not a silly person. And there's lots of things I'm learning as we go along, and it makes me more confident than to log on to my bank account, like Karen's saying, find out what's in my super. Am I getting paid as much as I should into my super account from my employer? What was the returns on my super? These are just simple actions that you can do just to be more aware of what's going on. And I think that's really important. And look, that leads me, we are almost running out of time, but it leads me to a concept I just wanted to quickly discuss then before we head off. But David, it's gotten me thinking about this idea about financial well-being, and that's an idea or a term that's thrown around a lot. What does that mean exactly?
Gee, that's a good question. And you're right, Gil, it is thrown around. That's a good thing. I think, as Karen was saying before, money is the last taboo. You know, we can talk about sport, religion, who we vote for now. We couldn't do that. Like, certainly my father's generation wouldn't do that. Now we do. Again, you know, we touched on mental well-being, which is fantastic. It's okay to not be okay. This is the last taboo. And so in terms of well-being, I think, look, there's definitional, and I think you can probably think about it quantitatively, that is, with numbers. But I like to think, and you get a couple little check-offs. You know, firstly, do I have a little bit of a rainy day account? And that is, just have a look at, this is maybe one practical thing to do, just have a look at your expenses, your normal monthly expenses, and times that by three. Just times it by three. And if that's 5,000 or 10 or whatever that maybe have access to that. Just have access to it. It just gives you a little bit of sense of well-being. That's one practical thing to do. Karen also touched on this. Think of money like or your household, like a big pot of water. Just have a look at what's coming in and what's coming out. Just do that alone. Awareness, that's half the battle.
Mm.
But I think from a well-being standpoint, again, we've sort of touched on this, it's about being considered. It's about not being rushed. It's about asking questions, asking about anything that you don't understand, looking at it really objectively. And that will feed into your sense of well-being on a personal level. And I guess the last thing is, yeah, treat it like a muscle. You know, feel empowered when it gets a little bit stronger. Take a few steps forward. And if you take a step back and you know, you don't walk that day or you don't run that week or you miss your diet, that's cool. You just get back on track.
Mm. And that ties in well with what I was going to do, was get you to wrap up a bit of all we've been talking about here. But I think you've done a good job for that from your aspects and your point of view, David. Karen, before we head off then, what is it that you think should be the takeaway messages for those who've been listening along?
Definitely around, if you're not where you want to be financially, take a look inward. So really go back to your patterns and behaviors, whether that being overspending, under-earning, and work out, why do I do what I do this? Because there's always a reason why we do what we do. And it's normally to protect ourselves. So just get really clear on what that is, because that internal workings are deeply affecting what's going on externally. And whether or not you feel comfortable doing a budget, working out to start with what are your monthly living expenses, having a plan for the future financially so you feel secure or financial freedom. Because at the end of the day, money just gives us choices. And it's also about having gratitude for where you are now financially. Because if we're all living in Australia, we've probably got a roof over our head, car and food.
Mm.
And so we're so much more wealthier than so many people in this world. So it's about starting with gratitude and working from there.
Mm. So many practical steps in this episode. I love it. That's what we like to do on Making Money Easy, is taking action. That is all we have time for. I will put a link to Karen and David in the show description if you wanted to find out more about them or read more about their ideas or even just find out what is David's Dad Bods. That is worth checking out just on its own. Don't forget to also check out my Instagram or Twitter for the latest videos about the podcast. And there's also some other good stuff on there too. You can find me by searching at Gillian H. Bowen and rate the pod. It's helping us move up the charts. Thank you, Karen Ely and David Harvey, for being the smartest people in my room this week.
Thanks, Gillian.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Making Money Easy with Gillian Bowen. This has been another production from the one and only Bowen's Garage, right across Australia.